We are the Commando Elite. Everything else is just a toy. Toy.
You're now listening to the award-winning Bart Cop Radio. And now, here's Bart Cop.
Saw something in the paper about Osama bin Laden and a little interview with Michael Chertoff, who's in charge of Homeland Security. And they say, why do you think there has not been another major attack on American soil since 9/11? And what does that tell us about the nature of the threat? And he gives back a whole pack of lies. Gee, that's strange. He says, we have disrupted a lot. We've disrupted overseas by taking out a significant percentage of the top leadership. We've disrupted at home by addressing sleeper cells. That's such a big lie. And bringing cases against people, secret cases that no one knows anything about. And sometimes they are not cases labeled terrorists. Sometimes the charges are much more garden variety charges involving document fraud or removing people using immigration. So anytime they find an immigrant without papers, they're claiming another terrorist success. We have increased our degree of surveillance at the borders. Oh, please, from what, 1% to 2%? They come across by the dozens in San Diego. Has anyone seen the footage? And our intelligence sharing has gotten much better. Our resolution on our determination to go forward without being intimidated have also sent a very strong signal to the terrorists. Yeah, the people who murder themselves are going to be afraid because now we've upped our intelligence. But I would be the last person to say we can rest easy or that we have eliminated the threat. These terrorists operate on a very, very long time horizon, and that's why the state we're trying to get into is one that is not complacency. Rather, one where we are mindful of the fact that there is a threat. We incorporate reasonable security measures and balanced security measures into our daily life, but don't operate in a state of clenched teeth all the time. This is such a pack of horseshit. There is nothing in this world that prevents a single... You know, Muhammad Atta and all his buddies, they were all living here and going to school and minding their own business, obeying the laws, not causing any trouble, not attracting any attention, and then they went crazy. There are probably hundreds of these crazy hand jobs in America right now. And that's also varying degrees. If you're a... I don't think you can divide it into terrorist and not a terrorist. You got a guy who's really hardline pro... Osama, but he's never done anything. He's never been to Yemen or anything like that. He just lives in America, and he likes the Islamic whatever. And every time he reads a report on the news about more Iraqis dying, he gets a little more angry. Now, what is to prevent this guy? Now, there is nothing in the world to prevent these guys from hijacking a gasoline truck and driving it into a school. The idea that we've increased border security and we're keeping a closer eye on these people, and that's why we're not having attacks, is bullshit. We're not having attacks because the order has been given, do not attack America. Now, who gave that order? Why in the world would Osama give that order to not attack America? Why would he tell his people, stand down for almost 4 years now, don't do anything in the United States, just stand down, just don't do a thing? Meanwhile, over in Iraq, these guys are blowing up Iraqi soldiers, sometimes five at a time. So these guys are willing to sacrifice their life to blow up five Iraqi soldiers when that same guy could be smuggled into America and he could drive a gasoline truck in the Radio City Music Hall while it's crowded and kill thousands of people. But they've been ordered not to. Did George Bush give the order? Did Osama give the order? Did Cheney give the order? Who gave the order not to attack America? Who gave the order America is off limits to the terrorists? Somebody gave that order because it is just not possible to stop these people from going crazy. You can't do it. Something that was so extra creepy about that London thing is they said, Ben, this was a guy that I knew, my next-door neighbor. We had dinner together. We played soccer together. He rode the bus with me to work every day. And then the guy goes, after years of that, then the guy goes crazy and blows himself up. Now, you can't stop that. But we don't have any of it here because someone gave the order. Another question for this Michael Chertoff. We have seen a poll coming out that says three-quarters of the people believe Bin Laden is planning a new attack. Half believe he will succeed. What are your thoughts on these numbers, and what can you tell the American people about what is being done to capture or kill Bin Laden? And here's his lie. Obviously, if Bin Laden were captured and killed, that would be a significant accomplishment, but I think it's a mistake to personalize this. Well, wait. When Bush jumped on that pile of rubble in New York with his bullhorn, he personalized it. He said the people that knocked these buildings down are going to hear from us soon. And then he went after Saddam to steal his oil. Now, it sure sounds to me like Bush and Osama have a plan worked out. I don't go after you. You don't attack America. Do we have a deal? If so, send us a message. And then when I say freedom's on the march, in my next press conference, that's my signal to you that, yes, I've heard your acceptance of the deal, and that's the deal we're going to keep. I don't go after you. You don't blow up America. They've worked out a deal. They have had to. There's no other, nothing else explains it. Can anybody out there explain why there are no terrorist attacks in America now? You can't do it. The only thing that could possibly explain it is that word has gone out. Don't do it. That's the only thing that explains it. So he says it's a mistake to personalize this. Whatever symbolic or charismatic value Bin Laden has, the operations are carried out and planned and generated by a cadre of leaders underneath him. So I don't think his presence makes a huge difference in terms of the threat. That's what they're telling people to get Bush off the hook, because he promised to get Bin Laden. And everybody said, yay, that's what we need. We needed a real leader. We needed someone like that. Because Gore and Kerry and Clinton, they just would have said, oh, that's okay, Osama. We don't want to make him mad. We'll just sit back and let him blow us up again. But not Bush. No. He's going after that guy, dead or alive. He's going to smoke him out of that cave, and he's going to kill him, because that's what Bush does, and he's going to do it, because he's a man of action. And now 4 years have gone by, and he went and stole Iraq's oil instead, and nobody calls him on it. Oh, I'm not even going to get into Kerry again about why he wouldn't bring that up during the convention. Nope, can't keep going back to that well. But I want to ask you one other thing. We'll close this section out. Think of the hammering Bill Clinton took and continues to take for what has it been, about 14 years now. We heard of Bill, I guess, in late 91, and then he started getting famous in 92. So it's been about 14 years. And think of the hammering they have put on Clinton. Then came Al Gore. Think of the hammering that the insult machine, the dirty politics machine, that bullshit so-called American free press that we have, think of the hammering they did on Clinton, on Gore, and then on Kerry. And it makes you wonder, why haven't they swift-boated Osama? We're losing the PR war in Iraq. Well, around the world, we're losing the PR war. So why have they let Osama off the hook? Why aren't there stories every day in the paper about Osama's a coward? He sends these young, stupid, idealistic men out to die. Meanwhile, he's sitting there. You know, you hear all these talk about the caves, but for all we know, he's living in one of Saddam's palaces, or he's living in some, you know, $10 million estate and pretending like he's in a cave somewhere, telling his little followers, oh, I'm in a cave fighting the infidels, but as far as we know, he's in a palace somewhere. So why doesn't Bush say that? Why doesn't the slur machine that they use on the Democrats, why haven't they turned that on Osama? Wouldn't that be a good idea if they could hurt Osama's reputation? Wouldn't that be a good thing if someone's 50-50, they kind of like Saddam, they kind of think what he did was bad and he's 50-50, and if America was to hammer back at Osama's image, wouldn't that be good? Don't you think the people who wanted to help us would increase and the people who wanted to blow themselves up would decrease? But no, they haven't put the hammer on Osama because he's Bush's friend. He serves a purpose. They've got to have the Osama boogeyman out there, or else if they don't, you know, when peace comes around, they're going to have to put meters on those wells and the gravy train's over in Iraq. So they can't do that. If peace comes around, they're not going to need Halliburton to get these $100 million contracts every couple of months. If peace breaks out, they can't make any money at peace. It's all over. The gravy train stops if peace breaks out. So they got to keep this war going as long as it is. Someone wrote me an email the other day, when the Soviet Union fell, you know, we had to have a boogeyman. We can't exist in peace. You cannot make any money in peace if you're the BFEE. If war is going on, you've got money coming in. So let's do a permanent, never going to end war. And it just puts hundreds of billions in Bush's pocket, and it's not going to stop until a Democrat says enough.
Pay attention, you will hear me tell all the people who are going to hell. Lesbian feminists with their witches' hats, homosexuals and Democrats. Well, if you want to be saved like me, you must take the Bible literally. Do it all or you'll be really dead. Except all that liberal stuff that Jesus said. It's important to have lots of guns. The way you'll know that you're the chosen one. You shouldn't have to pay for roads or schools. You're either fundamentalists or fools. Well, I don't know much about history. My kids don't need to know biology. Straight from homeschool to the voting booth. They'll know everything except the truth. Now to show your love is heaven sent, bomb the buildings of the government. No pray to statues, that is such a drag. No graven images except the flag. Thou shalt not kill at all, except in war, or when you need to even up the score, or forgetting what you want, of course, like some vital natural resource. Now as a token of my loving heart, I will help you get a running start. Straight to heaven where it's always great. Here's a list of sins that you must hate. Well, if you're gonna mix and match your clothes, you'll be going straight to hell along with those eating pork and ostrich and shrimp and clams. Or if you're a woman dressing like a man. Don't hate all women, just the ones who are smart. Cause it takes a man to make a family start. You'll beat your kids, of course, so they'll be tough. Unless you really aren't man enough. With full immersion, you'll have paid your dues. Unlike those filthy Catholics and Jews. But your A-list ticket to this holy bash is a good amount of cold hard cash.
I'd like to say a thing or two about this hand job called intelligent design. Now what they've done, they've taken the creation theory, which has been widely discredited as horse hockey, and renamed it intelligent design in an effort to start the conversation over. And in the new Bush world we live in, there's the facts and then there's what Bush says, and people say, well, what the hell, let's split the difference. I think it's a mistake to try to call evolution intelligent design. I assume that means things didn't just come about that Jesus or God or who are the Holy Ghost, somebody had the intelligence to physically create the world. And to me, that seems like a big mistake because it makes God stupid. It makes God the guy that put a bunch of dinosaurs here, but he didn't equip the dinosaurs with dust filters. So when the big comet hit, they all died. Now, if God designed everything personally, why did he make such a big mistake? It just doesn't seem right to blame everything that's wrong with the world on God because God isn't as smart as he should be, seems to me is what they're saying. And you know, I was listening to Michael Medved the other day. It was an accident on the XM radio. The Nazi channel is one notch away from Air America. So sometimes I get it by accident. But Michael Medved was taking calls from people about how the liberals don't want the God's greatness to be reflected in the whole debate over creation and all that. And he said something like, you know, Mike, it's the same people who try to promote this Big Bang theory. And that kind of struck me as funny. I mean, you can't argue with the Big Bang. You just can't. I mean, they do, but you know, the universe is expanding. No matter what you say, no matter what you wish, you can't make that fact into a non-fact. The universe is expanding. It just is, and it's measurable. You can see something. I don't know how they do it, but they can measure something today, and then they can measure it a year from today, and they can prove that it's farther away then, I'm sorry, now than it used to be. So the universe is expanding, and that seems to point to the fact that at one time, I mean, if you throw a ball in the street, you can tell by the direction of the ball what direction it came from. You know, if a ball's heading south down the street, you know it was thrown southward by somebody north of the ball's present position. So using that same kind of logic and math and algebra, they can figure out. And the universe is expanding in all directions. So that means at one point, it was all together. It just has to be. You just can't get around that. And the other thing is, this idiotic decision, what Bush is trying to push now, is why don't we teach both? Why don't we teach the science and logic of creation, and why don't we teach the biblical version? But it seems to me we already have that. Why don't we teach the science version in the schools, and we can teach the fairy tale stuff in the churches, where you go to give the charlatans your money? That just seems to make more sense. Let's leave our logic outside the church building, and we'll go in there and we'll fill our heads with a bunch of hoo-ha about the non-existent invisible clown being. And then once we leave the church, then we once again step back into reality, the science and logic world. Seems like that would be a pretty good idea. Well, of course, they want the science teachers to say that God woke up and in 7 days he did this and that. But you can't do that because if you've been to the Grand Canyon, they can stand there at the Grand Canyon, what do you call those guys, geologists? They can stand there and say, see this color red here? This is the so-and-so period from 200,000 years ago. And so when the Bible tells you that the earth is only, whatever, 4,000 or 6,000 years old, no, go to Arizona, look at the wall there. Every time the rock changes color, that's a couple of 100,000 years back, it keeps going. And every time the rock changes color, that's another couple of 100,000 years. And again, the religious people and the crazy Republicans, but I repeat myself, they want to ignore the science. I don't know how you exist in the world. How in the world can you win an election by saying, I reject science and logic. I think we should go with the fairy tales that my mother taught me. Or when I was a little kid, my parents taught me about this special world and the invisible cloud being, and I believed all that. And so I think we should go by that set of rules instead of the silly-ass science and logic stuff. It makes no sense. And so what they want to do is teach both versions in the schools. But that sounds a little crazy because if we're going to do things that way, then in biology class, when they explain how the sperm gets into the egg and creates a being, do we also have to explain about the cabbage patch or the stork, how if you do things right and once you get married, you fill out a form and you mail it to the stork and then here comes a giant bird flying in with your baby? I mean, are we going to teach people that in biology class? Are we going to teach kids that a flying bird is where you came from? And why would the flying bird deliver babies to women who are hopelessly addicted to crack? Why would the stork be that wrong, that stupid, that illogical? I don't know how we can straddle science and logic with the incredible stupidity that is organized religion. And if you're a religious person, I'm not attacking you. I'm attacking the forced adherence to religion. This is what Bush is doing. They want to make it a law that God is watching. They want to make it a law that God loves us. They want to make it a law that, I don't know, that you go to church. Once they start making pro-God laws, do you think they're going to stop? Do you think they're going to take a quarter of a loaf and say, that's all we ever wanted? That's all we ever wanted was for people to say God exists and we're done? No, they're not. Once they get up a little steam, they're going to ask for more. And pretty soon, if you don't go to their church, it's us against them. You're either with Bush or you're with Bin Laden. Those are your two choices. And I think we ought not to go there. And again, you religious people especially should be double extra on my side in this, because what if a guy like me were to take over someday, and what if I put America's tanks behind my opinion that there is no God? What if Bart becomes president and I make it illegal to write the word God, to say the word God? I'm just using this for a point. I wouldn't do this, but what if I became president and used the tanks and the guns and the military to dismantle all the churches in the country, and just for argument's sake, we'll have to shoot all the religious leaders to stamp out this evil? Now see, you wouldn't want that to happen, wouldn't you? Wouldn't it be nice if the guns and the tanks had nothing to do with religion? See, now that's how it ought to be, and people ought to be on my side, because if the more religious you are, the more you don't want some some guns and tanks backing up some other guy's religious point of view. Don't you want religious freedom? That's what I'm talking about. Wouldn't it be a good goal for everybody to be for religious freedom? And that means we teach science and logic in the schools, and we make decisions that affect Americans using science and logic. But when you go to your church, like I say, you leave your science and logic outside, and you go into that building where the rules don't apply, where people live forever, and there's a heaven and there's an earth, and you got an angel on your shoulder that warns you and protects you, and God has a plan for you and all that. That's what happens inside that building. And then when you leave that building, we're back to science and logic. You should be with me on this because I'm always right.
Thousands of people in a line almost a mile long marched through the streets of Atlanta today to mark the 40th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act and to try to keep the landmark legislation from expiring in 2007. Randall Pinkston reports.
It was as if someone turned back the clock in Atlanta today in a race against the clock to prevent the expiration of key provisions of the Voting Rights Act. Four decades ago, another march on a bloody Sunday in Alabama prompted a nation to act.
This is a victory for the freedom of the American Negro, but it is also a victory for the freedom of the American nation.
The legislation allowed millions of blacks throughout the South to vote, most for the first time. For a handful like Ann Emery, who were already registered voters, the Voting Rights Act ended decades of humiliation at the poll.
I had to go get a man, a white man, with a fourth grade education, to vouch for me to say I was worthy of voting in the state of Alabama.
We have a right to come inside if we want to register to vote.
The Voting Rights Act of 1965 eliminated restrictions keeping minorities from the polls. It also permitted the federal government to oversee the rules for voting, and that's the provision about to expire.
Without the Voting Rights Act of 1965, you wouldn't have many of us in the United States Congress.
Critics of the extension say the success of minority candidates shows that discrimination is ancient history, and the Voting Rights Act is no longer necessary.
But today's demonstrators insist this isn't about the past, it's about the future.
If we fail to reauthorize certain section of the act, there is a possibility, there is a danger of us slipping back to another period.
A real fear for those who lived through the decades of discrimination.
If you don't have an opportunity to vote, you really don't have much reason to exist.
And the generation that fought for voting rights say they will now fight to keep them. Randall Pinkston, CBS News, New York.
I feel safe with you.
The government used him as a pawn to influence the world.
There are millions of people that all need help.
The English don't believe this to us.
The corporations thought she was merely a troublemaker.
Will you believe me if I tell you that that poor girl over there being murdered?
They couldn't have been more wrong.
Big pharmaceuticals right up there with the arms dealers.
Payoffs, cover-ups, unmarked graves, murder.
America's top critics are raving. It's smart, provocative, and genuinely tense.
There's an epidemic coming. It will affect the entire world.
An unbelievably suspenseful edge-of-your-seat thriller.
They want you silenced. Don't try and play detective.
Crazy. These people, they kill anybody.
I have to finish what he starts.
From the international bestseller comes the most anticipated thriller of the year.
Some very nasty things live under rocks, especially in foreign gardens.
The Constant Gardener, rated R. Experience it on the big screen, August 26th.
I would like to thank the producers and the publicity people for The Constant Gardener for advertising on BartCop.com. Also, Bill Maher and his publicity people and or producers chose to advertise on BartCop.com. Thanks for that. You're making a hammer hire. If you have a business or a cause you'd like to publicize, think about spending some money on BartCop.com. That's what Hollywood does when they want to reach the people.
Hi, I'm not the conscience of the Senate, and neither is Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman was one of 10 Democratic senators to support the first Iraq war. He said, "You can't let a bully like that overrun a neighboring country." Well, garsh, Joe Bob, maybe sane people around the world see George W. Bush, and by extension, America, as a bully. Maybe religio-political extremists will gladly kill themselves to take a few bullies out from their native part of the world. When Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky's reenactment of Deep Throat was made public, Joe called Bill Clinton's behavior inappropriate, immoral, and harmful. Maybe it's just me, but I think that I would rate Bill Clinton getting his intern of legal age as less inappropriate, immoral, and harmful than lying to start an unprovoked war. Joe didn't show an independent streak when Tom Daschle told the Democratic senators to not sign the Black Congressional Caucus petition in December of 2000 challenging the Florida electors. Jeb Bush, Catherine Harris, Ted Olson, Antonin Scalia, Clay Roberts, and the media whores got prison shanks from the Bush family private stash and slit the throat of American democracy. Joe Lieberman couldn't pick up a pen to fight for the votes that he and Al Gore earned, the coward. Where were Joe's harsh moral judgments from the well of the Senate on Bush's scummy campaign against his old friend John Kerry? Why won't he say that Bush has failed to bring honor and dignity to the White House? Joe Lieberman is a religious accomplice of evil.
For today, service members deserve better honor. USA Today's editorial on the deaths of 14 Marines was a welcome reminder about the selflessness of a tiny few voiceless, courageous American service members, mainly from our small towns, who have died in Iraq for an opaque cause. Imagine that our rich and elite live their daily lives blithely gliding along, hardly pausing to even utter a silent prayer for these victims and their families. President Bush was vacationing in Texas when our Marines died. Our president has yet to attend the funeral of any of the more than 1,800 victims of his war. This is from Matthew Connolly, Massachusetts. Notice how he called it Bush's war. Boy, if we can only get a Democrat to put the label on it that it deserves. It's not America's fight against terrorism. This is Bush's bloody mistake in Iraq. Too bad we can't find a Democrat that will say that. When our young Ohio Marines are brought back through Dover Air Force Base to be carried home, I'd suggest to the President that he attend a funeral for these victims of his war. Maybe then, after honoring these valiant Marines in person, he will clarify us the, quote, noble cause and selfless cause that brought about their deaths. But he's not going to do that. He has never made a mistake. He is never going to admit making a mistake. Somebody told him that if you ever change your mind, if you ever back down, if you ever adjust course, you are a loser and a wimp. And I read a thing the other day that Bush's approval is, what, 34%, like that, somewhere in there right now, and it's going to stay there. It's never, ever going to drop any lower, because 34% of the country are with this man no matter what. He could accidentally drop a nuclear bomb in New York City, and they'd say, well, that's the price we pay for having a fearless leader like godly Bush. No matter what he does, can you imagine that? That's what they said about us when Clinton got caught with a girlfriend. Oh, he'll stand behind a man no matter what he does. But Clinton didn't kill a couple of thousand servicemen. Clinton didn't start a war for no damn reason. Clinton got a little tongue on the side. There are so many people who think starting a war on a lie and killing 2,000 soldiers is not as bad as getting a blowjob. It's amazing that we live in that kind of world. How is that possible? Murder is almost as bad as a blowjob. Well, I don't guess we know that it's almost as bad. We know that a blowjob is worse than killing 2,000 soldiers, but we don't know if the 2,000 soldiers is only a 2 on the outrage scale and the blowjob is a 10. We don't know exactly where the murders fit on the 0 to 10, the 10 being the blowjob. It's just the craziest damn thing in the world. Whatever Bush does is okay. They don't mind. And right now it appears as though a majority of the country doesn't like Bush, doesn't trust him. But he doesn't need the approval of anybody. If Bush's approval rating was 0, he's still going to steal $100 million a day. $100 million a day can buy a whole lot of comfort. Boy, I got 0 approval rating, but I'm making $100 million a day, and I've been making $100 million a day for almost 4 years. Think of what kind of money that is. And think of the favors the oil companies are going to owe this guy when he leaves office. A name that you're going to hear a lot of at BartCop.com and on the BartCop radio shows a whole lot between now and the end of 2006 is Jeanine Pirro, is probably how you say that. This crazy bitch is running against Hillary for the New York Senate, and it's probably a detriment to be named as the person that Hillary's going to stomp. I mean, that Rick Santorum guy, whatever happened to him? Whoever you put up against Hillary is probably going to get his ass kicked all over the place. So, and it's pretty much a career ender. I mean, once Hillary kicks your ass, where do you go from there? I don't think, like, as with Santorum, he hadn't been heard from since. Is he, I don't know if he's in, maybe he's active in New York politics, but he sure hasn't made any kind of news since Hillary kicked his ass in 2000. But this Jeanine Pirro, she's a district attorney who apparently is dirty. Apparently she's taking money from the mob. She was almost a nightly fixture on Larry King, and her and Nancy Grace would sit there and giggle about murdering Scott Peterson. And I don't know if you saw these. It would have been too bad I didn't save any on videotape or whatever. It would be great to play them now. But Nancy Grace, of course, is the ringleader, and Jeanette was right there. And fuck. Nancy Grace, of course, was the ringleader, but Jeanine was right there with her. I remember one time they talked about the first date that Scott had with Amber Frye. And apparently, I don't remember that exactly, but he brought her roses and I think some chocolate-covered strawberries, and he reserved a room at the hotel. I mean, he was pretty sure he was going to score that on the first date. And I think he had some champagne, maybe that's what it was. He had champagne, and I think he even brought his own, like, champagne glasses, and the flowers, and the chocolate-covered strawberries. And, oh, they just would sit there and say, oh, when he brought her flowers. And then they giggle about what an idiot move that was. And then they say, oh, when he brought champagne. And they giggle about what an idiot move that was. And, oh, and then he brought her strawberries. And they just would slap their thighs and say, oh, my gosh, this is such an idiot. You know, why, geez, it worked. If you're going to be making fun of somebody, you shouldn't be making fun of Amber Frye, who apparently for the price of champagne and strawberries and a couple of roses is ready to drop her pants for this guy on the first date. But anyway, this Jeanine Pirro, she is Nancy Grace Jr. She's got this law and order attitude that if you've been accused, you are guilty. Now, it's one thing if you're the district attorney and they bring you a case and it's your job to hang the guy. But just to have the mindset that if you've been accused, you did it. And, you know, I don't guess I'm ever going to get past the railroading. What I think, do I think Scott Peterson did it? Probably. But like the state of California, I don't have any proof. But yeah, they're probably going to murder Scott Peterson. And you know, this Jeanine Pirro and Nancy Grace are going to be sitting there giggling the whole time. Boy, I tell you, that's so creepy when the people that have the power, and both of them have been prosecutors, so in that regard, they both have had the power to put people to death. And for them to enjoy that, like the idiot smirk, you know, the giggling murderer. Well, this lady is a giggling murderess. Between her and Nancy Grace, isn't that also a little scary that Nancy Grace probably personally hung Scott Peterson? The people on that jury, they weren't going to come out of there with a not guilty verdict. No, he was going. No matter if there's no body, no matter if there's no murder weapon, no matter if there's no motive, no matter what, he's going to be guilty because Nancy Grace, every night, was it 3 hours a night? Every night, every night, every night, 3 hours. He did it, he did it. That son of a bitch, we can't let him get away. That son of a bitch, we got to hang him. That son of a bitch, what about baby Connor? Oh, it's so terrible. We got to get this guy. No matter what happens, we got to get this guy. He's a murderer, and we all know it, and I don't know why they're bothering with a trial. And yep, he's found guilty, yep. We sentence him to death, yep. They're going to put a needle in that guy. I've never seen it before, but Nancy Grace did that with the help of this Jeanine Pirro, whose ass Hillary is going to kick. Go Hillary.
How do you spell badass liberal talk? BCR, Bart Cobb Radio.